Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
My buddy Doug Wall just goes, he just texts me and goes, I just heard the shout out for Penny, my dog. Thank you.
That's how we're gonna start the show, baby, right there. Yeah, that's it right there.
That's hilarious.
That's why we do the Rusty. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming out with another episode of The Suspendables with me and, of course, longtime NHLer and he should win the Nobel Prize for White Claw. Okay. Nobel Prize for Consumption, of course, that's Russ Cortinel. Rusty, before we bring you on the show today, you're going to notice this new format, Russ, and I'll tell you why. On the show today, it was this month, 33 years ago. Can you think, Russ, 1987, what I'm going to bring up?
Woo! Yeah, I have a feeling.
Okay, Canada Cup.
Oh, fuck, that wasn't a feeling.
Oh, bad feeling, okay. You got a bad feeling.
Fuck.
One of the greatest series of all time, the final there between Canada and Russia. That happened at Cops Coliseum. Everyone remembers where they were.
What a game.
Oh. What a game it was for sure. The playoffs, of course, are into the final round. By the way, we record on Sunday nights. Don't get all freaked out now, okay? It comes out on Wednesday morning. We record Sunday night, so we miss a couple of days. We can't. There's no good way to do it, okay? Unless it was
kind of like when you were drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Honey, I'm home. Where were you last 48 hours? What?
What happened? You went out to get a quart of milk. That was on Monday. Jesus, it's Thursday afternoon.
It's now cream.
It's now curdle. That's right. It's butter. No, honey, we got butter. Yes, it was 33 years ago. Team Canada played Russia in what they're calling one of the greatest series. It was best of three. And what a team. Holy man. The guys were on that team, Russ. And by the way, I forgot about this, but in 1987, Russians were not allowed in the NHL. And what a team they had. We're going to talk about that. Contracts are always going on, Russ. Always, okay? Everyone's in negotiations. And I want to talk to you about holding out, whether this should be guys do that. It drives me nuts. So how does a guy get the most money from his agent or through the team? So also the Stanley Cup, we got to talk about that. It's Dallas. I was saying it's Dallas and Tampa. So you're really torn because you used to play with Dallas. Mm-hmm. And your buddy John Cooper is through to the final. You must have been excited when they got through.
Yes.
They're down one game, zip. Dallas beat them. What a story, Russ. Let's start with that. What a story. Before we do that, though, Russ, hang on.
Oh, God. Okay?
Before we do it, hang on.
Somebody's
hang
had
on.
Their coffee.
Yeah, hang on. Doesn't this remind you of my days when I did blow? Hang on, Russ. Hang on. Hang on one sec. Just wait, Russ. So, Rusty, we got you're going to laugh at this. So we got a bunch of people. The show's picking up steam and COVID's, you know, we've adapted to it. Bill Yeady is the guy behind this podcast. So he's in L.A. He's tremendous help with this. Reg Johns is in San Diego. He's kind of a content guy and analytics guy. And David Wolf is the guy who's doing all these great videos that you can see on. We're on YouTube now, the Suspendables podcast. Check out the videos. They're great. We got Steve in Ottawa. We got my buddy Mark in
United
Kitchener.
Nations.
What's that? Yeah, I'm in Edmonton. You're in Idaho or LA. So we've been having these meetings, Russ, okay, for the show. And so there are all these conference calls. We get on with Reg and maybe Dave's there, maybe Steve, maybe my buddy Mark, okay? And they're saying, okay, you got to do this, Jim. You got to hit this link here. You got to paste and copy that. Okay, you got to share, make a comment on that post. Don't do it on there. Okay, get on your laptop. You can't do that on your phone. And, you know, make sure you do that. Rejig this. You got to shorten this up, Jimmy. Maybe get Russ to try this, and you do that. Blah, 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 right? And these are like 45-minute meetings. And then at the end of this meeting, Rusty, they say, now, Jim, would you go ahead and get Russ to come on one of these meetings? I said, you can try that. I said, wouldn't Russ want to sit in on one of these meetings? I said, Russ, don't roll that way, baby. Yeah. Russ doesn't roll this. So I've saved you. I've saved you from all
this. Thanks. Reg, fellow Canadian.
There's a ton of work and effort going into it. Anyway, so I had to laugh. But can we get Russ on one of those meetings? I went, no.
Now that's funny.
I said, don't ask why. Don't ask why, you know. I still got a VHS, Russ, and they're telling me to push buttons and click this and do that. You're no better than I am, are you?
Oh, at any of that stuff? I'm bad. I 5 years ago, I learned how to copy and paste, but it took about 6 freaking months. Exactly. Oh, my God. It was so embarrassing. When I started working for Discovery, I was on a BlackBerry, no computer.
Yeah.
They give me a laptop and an Apple iPhone. And I'm like, they're going, you know, just say it's simple. This kid from frickin', you know, Stanford's like across the hall telling me what to do. I'm like, holy shit, slow down.
Yeah, I can't.
Anyways,
do it. Don't you find this? They go, my kid will come over and go, Dad, it's so simple, Dad. Oh, it's so God. Simple, right?
Yeah.
And I go, no problem. This always happens, Russ. They go, look at Dad. And they go like this, click, click, click. And then they go, now what's that? I haven't seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to simple? Anyway, the series. Did you watch the game? Or you know, I'd like to see you.
I did. I watched. I've been watching actually more hockey than I normally do. It's been great, even though it's been in the dead of summer through September. I mean, it's just been for us down up here at Gosser or down here in Gosser. It's been fantastic and gathering points for different people from around the country watching their teams and cheering them on, and then us retired hockey players that are up here, we've been getting together to watch some games and pulling for our old team. So it's been fun. I've really, really enjoyed it, and I think for us hockey fans, visually the games are phenomenal. I mean, with the only thing missing are the fans, but the sound that they've got going, the players are reacting just like they would if there were 18,000 people watching them. It's great.
Right.
Visually, it's fantastic.
Hey, Rusty, I'm going to ask you about the sellies, you know, the celebrations.
Yeah.
There was a great one where the goalie slid on his gut.
Oh, yeah, New York Islanders. When they won in overtime, Eberle scored, and the goalie skated to the far, just inside the, well, he skated to center and then did the swan dive and slid into his teammates as they were all cheering on, you know, Eberle, congratulating him, and took out a couple guys.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny, but what a great celebration.
Best one.
Goalie. Yeah, it was,
best
it was
one.
Good.
I said, I got to ask Rusty, the celebration, some of them were getting out of hand, but I thought maybe Russ likes them all. Was it Tagger Williams who first rode the stick? Didn't he?
Rode the witch's broom down the center ice with the lasso. Theo Fleury did it against the Oilers when they scored an overtime goal, I think it was.
Yep.
Don't know who else has done it. But Tiger for sure could do it and back it up if anyone didn't like it.
Yeah, you gotta just punch the shit out of him. Yeah. What was yours? Did you have a celly? What was yours?
I just went crazy when I scored. I freaking love to score, and it just depended on the goal, the time, what the goal meant, and I went from anywhere from just gliding with my hands in the air to flying around the ice to jumping into my teammates' arms. I mean, I didn't have one set celebration. I couldn't even tell you because it was such a – it was just – I just lost myself in that moment when I scored, and I just go crazy, and it wasn't like my autograph where it's the same every time. It was just whatever I was feeling at the moment.
Cool.
But the one of the funniest ones I've ever heard is Matt Pettinger's playing in Washington with Ovi, and they're on the same line, and he was going, you know, he goes nuts whenever he scores and his teammate scores. And
right.
when they had to draw the line was when he scored and he went flying over and jumped into the referee's arms and almost took him out of the game. And so Matt Pender said, yeah, we had to sit him, Ovi, down, like, you know, hey, Ovi, it's great, but you can't jump on the referee.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
But there's been, you know, anytime anyone scores, it's great. Gretz was probably the calmest when he scored. I mean, he put his arm in the air, and, you know, I guess for him, too, it depended on what kind of goal it was, but he scored so many freaking goals, I guess. He couldn't raise his arms all the time. He would have
sure.
been what?
Separate his shoulders. there's good and bad ones, you know. When you brought up the Oilers, those are the ones we remember. Like, no one will ever forget Tiger Williams, and Theo copied it later on. Mike Foligno, remember how uncoordinated that jump he would do? Do you remember?
Oh, God. He hurt some teammates. He hurt some teammates.
Yeah. He did this uncoordinated, like, he'd jump in the air about... Yeah. 4 inches or something and whip his feet up. And yeah. It was just the stupidest thing ever.
It's funny you brought that up because I played a lot of games against him because I played Montreal and he was in Buffalo. And when he scored, he would jump and raise his knees up to his shoulders.
Yeah.
And apparently he took out some guys when he came on his way down. He hurt some teammates' ankles. But yeah.
Probably his own.
Yeah. There's some good ones.
Pat Maroon, he plays with Tampa now.
Yeah,
but he spent some time here in LA. And he won a cup with St. Louis.
Yeah, and he's from St. Louis.
Right,
he's
exactly.
A homegrown St. Louis boy and a great guy. Had a chance to sign a long term deal in Edmonton for a lot of money. Didn't do it, and then he's. You know, bounced around a little bit, but won a cup last year, has a chance to win another cup this year, and everybody loves playing with him. He's a great team guy, and I've had the opportunity to talk to him a few times on the phone a few years ago, and
right.
couldn't have been nicer, and Kelly Chase says nothing but great things about him.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's the best buddy now of Ty Gretzky since the other days. They've become good buddies. Anyway, speaking of Sellies, I think he had the best one ever, so all these guys... You know the way they are now, Russ? They're designing. Like, if you watch baseball, they're designing how you do a high five with that guy, and the next guy you do a shimmy, and the other guy. It's kind of like, whatever, boys, okay? Just, like, play like you belong, okay?
Yeah.
Pat Maroon would score a goal, and he'd skate over to the corner, Russ?
Yeah.
And he'd stand straight up in the corner of the glass and do nothing but bust his eyes wide open. Like, okay? He wouldn't move. He wouldn't raise his hand. Okay. He wouldn't throw a stick up. He'd skate right to the corner, go up, and just like he'd snap his eyes like wide open, right? Look, he wouldn't smile or anything. Anyway, the reason I bring it up I think it was Carolina too, where they all go to center ice to thank the fans, I think, at the end of
their... that's after the game. They put on a skit.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
I'm not a fan. I'm with Brian Burke on this one.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
Rusty, as we move along here, the Canada plays Russia in the best of three final in the Canada Cup in 1987. Check the roster out here, Russ. I've just written down a few names, okay? Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky.
You should have done a quiz. Okay. Should ask me who is.
Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
No, that's fine.
You're pouting now? You're going to pout?
Sutter, Tockett, Claude Lemieux, Doug Gilmore, Mark Messier, Glenn Anderson, Paul Coffey, Larry Murphy.
Yes.
Grant Fuhrer.
Yes.
Other
goalies now.
Gretzky, goalie. Mary Lemieux, Steve Larmer, was he on that team?
I think he was.
He was on 91. He wasn't. Maybe he wasn't on 87. Goulet.
How do you know all this?
Fuck, I watched the game.
Really?
Yeah. I'm just visualizing now.
I got the list in front of me.
Defense. There was a big defense.
You named only one goalie. There's two others.
Yeah. So it was Grant Fuhrer and...
He won a Conn Smythe. Not the other goalie.
Oh, from Philadelphia.
In a losing cause.
Yeah, Hextall.
Ronnie Hextall, yeah.
Yeah.
The third goalie played in L.A., played for New York.
Kelly Rudy?
Yes, Kelly Rudy. Attaboy. Yeah, you're going good. Did you name Dale Hawerchuk?
I was gonna end with that because Dale just passed away and he won the faceoff in the final goal. That
right.
Was Gretz set up and Mario scored and used Larry Murphy as a decoy.
Right.
The defense, though, it was Koff.
Yeah, this will surprise you, I think, because I don't know if a couple of these guys were on it.
Larry Murphy.
One guy, I don't even know his name. Doug Crossman was on that
team?
Yeah,
Doug Crossman, yeah. He had a wooden stick and he taped it about 4 inches in the middle or to the heel. Barely had any tape on his stick. Really good defenseman.
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Tape your stick like that?
Ask him.
I don't know. Okay. Let's see. So you got Dale Hawerchuk, Mark Messier, Mike Gardner. Did you get him?
No, I didn't have Gartz.
Doug Crossman, Craig Hartsburg.
Hartsy. I wouldn't have got Hartsy.
James Patrick.
Man, Jeep was on that team. You know, I went to New...
Jeep? That's his name? Yeah, James or JP? Yeah,
his nickname was Jeep. And when I was a bantam at Notre Dame in Saskatchewan, in Wilcox, he was a midget. And he played... his defense partner was Gord Kluzak. Best midget team ever put together in Canada. Oh, my God.
Wow.
11 to 12 guys drafted into the NHL... Obviously not out of midget, but later, a couple years later, 12 out of 20 players all got drafted into the NHL. Unbelievable.
From what team was that now? Where?
Notre Dame Hounds in Wilcox, Saskatchewan. They won
your alma mater.
Yeah, they won the national title, what was called the Wrigley Cup back in the old days.
Can you imagine? 11 kids.
12. I think it was 12, actually.
Here's one. You mentioned Ray Bourque.
Oh, I didn't mention Ray, no.
Okay.
I was more watching the forwards, I guess.
Yeah, Larry Murphy, Paul Coffey. I didn't even heard of this guy. Norman Rochford.
Rochford, that's who I was trying to guess out of Quebec. Him and Goulet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Norman Rochford. I couldn't remember his name. I just remember big guy, dark hair, mustache. Might have been bald.
Where are they now? Holy man. Anyway, what a team. And, of course, Ron Hextall, you mentioned the goalie, Kelly Rudy and Grant Fuhr. The coach was Mike Keenan.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean Perron was a coach. Tom Watt was a coach on that team.
Yeah.
And, of course, I call him Rum Nose. He doesn't like it. John Muckler because he's got the big red nose.
Where's Mux these days?
Mux was scouting right up till not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And he, after, you didn't come to sort of the last few years of the camp, I think. And he started showing up. As a coach, and he lives in Florida.
Right.
Probably retired now. Like, I think a lot of those guys, like another guy I ran into was a guy named Jim Pappin, who's a guy from Sudbury, and those guys are getting close to 80 years old, you know, but they all seem to have a gig, you know, with some team doing, they're probably not traveling scouts, you know, but they do a bunch. So look at the stats, Russ, from that, that Canada Cup, so they played 9 games. Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky got 40 points. sorry, 39.
Oh, sorry.
Wayne Gretzky got 21 points, and Mario got 18, and Wayne only had 3 goals.
Yeah.
But he had 18 assists, and I don't know what Mario had, 11 or 12 goals or something like that. So they got 30% of all the points in that tournament.
It was amazing. It was so much fun. I got invited to go. Steve Richmond, friend of mine from Toronto, and Lloyd Perlmutter, two guys that I met in Toronto, invited me to go to that game. They had a ticket for me, and you know, I was like, I'm kind of too proud. It's weird watching those guys. I want to watch it on TV. I don't want to be seen in the stands cheering on these guys that I played against. It was just weird.
That's weird.
I don't know why I felt like that, but I was young, and these guys I played against, there wasn't one guy on my team playing for Canada, and I didn't know. I only knew these players to play against them.
So how old are you then? What year?
So I was 22.
Right, right. Okay.
Playing in Toronto. It was in Hamilton. They're like, come on, let's go to the game. And I said, nah, I feel weird going to the game. I'll watch it on TV. So I stayed home in Mississauga, and I watched the game and just loved it. I was standing cheering like everybody else who's a hockey fan in Canada watching that and screaming at the TV. But I could have gone to the game, and for years after were teasing me that, why didn't you come? Why didn't you come? And I was 22, didn't know any better. But
right. I thought you were going to say, because maybe you should have been on the team. I'm not being funny.
No, it wasn't that.
What was your thought when they put those national teams together when you were in the NHL?
My friend, an ex-teammate, called me that summer and played a prank on me and said, hi, this is Glenn.
No.
No. Rich Chernomaz. I played junior hockey with him in Victoria. And I think he was a third round pick to New Jersey. And he had been playing in Europe because he didn't make it, whatever. So he's in Port Alberni. He calls me in Victoria and he goes, is Russ Courtnell there? Yeah, this is Glenn Sather from Team Canada, and we're excited to invite you to training camp. I'm like, oh my God.
No.
And I go, and I'm thinking, well, it could be true because like this is, you know, I just came off the 84 Olympics. Maybe they want somebody with some international experience. Oh, fuck, I'm hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, love this, baby.
Hook, line, and sinker. I think I'm going to Montreal and Toronto for training camp. Like, I've already got my bags packed.
Oh, no.
And then he starts laughing, so he got me. And I'm like, you bastard. Yeah. So years later, he's now coaching in Europe.
Right.
And I call him up. And I say, this is a representative of the whoever owned the Canucks at the time, whether it was McCaw or Aquilini,
right?
Excuse me. That owned the Canucks. And they're like, we've been watching your career, and I've got all his stats down of where he's coached and where he played in Germany. And I'm like freaking getting him back. And I'm like, so would you consider coming back home? Coach in the Vancouver Canucks. He goes, I'd love to. It's been a dream of mine. He's going on and on and on and on. And I go, T-Mac's a bitch.
Who was that, Russ?
Rich Chernomaz. Great goal scorer. Had Popeye forearms. He's an awesome teammate, awesome guy. I haven't seen him in years. Probably the last time I ever talked to him was on the phone when I called him up and see if he wanted to coach the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, that is the best.
Oh, yeah, I got him.
So
it took
cruel,
me years.
Though.
It took me 13 years, I think, to get him back, but I got him.
So cruel, though. That's cruel.
Oh, God, he got me. He got me good. But I made the team in 91.
Yeah, right. I remember. Yes, of course. Yeah. So there was no thought about the 87 one? You thought, Jesus, I want to.
No,
I should have been
not even. I was 22 years old.
Right.
No way. And 91, I was surprised I made the team. I had a really good year in Montreal. I think I led the team in points that year. So I felt like I deserved the invite for sure. And then it came down to Claude Lemieux and I. I was actually just talking to Gretz about this the other day of the players that were cut. They kept Eric Lindros over Steve Yzerman.
No
and,
way.
And Joe Sakic. Yeah, they cut Joe Sakic and Steve Yzerman. They kept Eric Lindros. And so what they did was, and I forgot about this, Mess did not come to camp. We had a 5-week camp. And Mess was like, no, I'm not coming.
Because it's holidays, like I mean,
it was August. It's in your middle
and
of your summer.
And they played till June in 1987. Right.
Well, 1991. So, anyways, there's Lindros, Sakic, and Yzerman are the three guys. So two of them are going to make it.
Lindros, out of those three, Yzerman and Sakic. Holy
yeah,
Jesus.
Two of those guys are going to make it, and one's going to get cut. And that, so they cut Yzerman and Messier, or they cut one of them, and then Messier said, I'll come, and then they cut the other one and kept Lindros.
Wow.
Yeah, over Sakic and Yzerman. So I was in the room that day with Claude Lemieux, and they said there were six guys going to get cut.
Right.
And they put it three. They put us in a room together, so two guys per room, three rooms, and or maybe there was more. Maybe there was a dozen. There were six rooms. Whatever. They were cutting six guys, and Claude and I were roommates. They put us in the frickin' room together. How cruel is that?
Oh no!
The phone rings. He answers it.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll tell him. I'll tell him." And so I'm going, "Oh fuck! I just got cut."
Right.
He hangs up and he goes, "Congratulations, you made the team. I got cut."
No way.
Yeah, that's how it happened.
And you're in the same room.
Yeah, we're in the same room.
Jesus.
Yeah, we're going to cut one of you guys. I mean, it was just brutal. But that was Mike Keenan, right? He was always playing mind games.
How did Claude, Claude, what a cool guy not to be pissed.
Yeah, he was, you know, obviously disappointed. Who wouldn't be? But he, you know, he didn't show it. He congratulated me. We played together in Montreal and, you know, it was sucked. It,
right.
It sucks for anybody.
Right.
And so anyways, that was our 91 Canada Cup story.
Still one of your best experiences, Russ, eh?
Oh,
playing for Canada?
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great. Played with the late Dale Hawerchuk there, too.
Yep.
Played against him. My first fight in the NHL was against Dale, and then I got to play with him in 1991, and what a great guy, and what a terrible thing, you know, having losing a guy so young.
One of the, when you bring up that prank story, Gord Miller, who you would know from TSN, Gordy's been around a long time, from Edmonton, to make a long story short.
Oh, God.
Okay, they wanted to prank Gord Miller because he told Chris Cuthbert, you know that name as well, they told Chris that Bobby Orr was in town in Edmonton to see Paul Coffey perhaps break his record and get 50 goals as a defenseman, okay? And so Cuthbert phones Miller and says, go to Molson where I was working, pretend it's a press conference, Jimmy, set it all up because I want to prank Gordon. Or Miller wanted to prank Cuthbert, sorry. So we show up there. Chris Cuthbert shows up. He goes, what's going on, Jim? There's no one here. And then I'm to go, April Fool's, Chris. This is Gord Miller who pranked you, okay? There's no, Bobby Orr's not in town, okay?
Right.
So years later, okay, this is like, you know how cruel the one was that that guy did to you, okay?
Yeah.
Miller apparently applies for a job with ESPN in Philadelphia, okay? Okay. You can tell where this is going. And they, Chris Cuthbert at the time and Gord Miller worked for CBC here in Edmonton, okay? Yeah. And, of course, Miller, you know, Gordy, he's confident, you know, and telling guys, I applied for this job at ESPN, you know, and if I get it, see you later, fellas. Right?
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you what, no love lost here, man, if I get the gig. So, Jesus, they kind of have a huddle, Chris Cuthbert and their buddies, and go, yep, hammer him with it. So he's coming back to the office in the CBC van. And it's pink slips, you know, for messages at the, back then. No cell phone. And there's a message for Gord. Phone the HR department at ESPN. Okay. No. Apparently. And Gord will sit there and they got it all figured out. They got the guy on the other line. Or congratulations, we'd like to offer you the job for ESPN.
Oh my God.
Okay. Okay. Rusty. Okay. So if that's not bad enough, really, to put a guy through that. Here's what happens next. He's got the keys for the van, the CBC van, in his hand, okay?
Yeah.
He hangs up. He goes, thank you very much. And they say, "You give us a call back this afternoon." He goes, no problem, right? Hangs the phone up. He goes, yes, fellas, yes! Grabs the keys, throws them at the manager, his boss, okay? And goes, see you later, losers!
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
Oh, fuck.
Could you imagine? I'm probably embellishing, but not very much. The reason I know I'm not embellishing, because Chris Cuthbert saw him going off and thought, I got to stop him, and he couldn't stop him in time before he walked into his manager's office and said, I quit. Anyway.
That's
great beautiful. Prank story. Anyway, wasn't that a series? Canada, Russia, 1987. And Rusty, did you ever think... I had mentioned earlier there were no Russians who played in the NHL at that time, and then of course they started to. I was talking to a guy the other day, Rusty. Were you ever thinking at some point when that started to happen that these guys are going to take North American jobs? What was the attitude around back then when they started?
There wasn't a lot of. You know, the Stastnys came over, then the from, was it Czechoslovakia or Slovakia. I can't remember. I think they were Czech.
Don't ask me.
Back.
Yeah.
And then Larionov, Krutov, Makarov, Fetisov, and what the other defenseman, the big five, they all came over. So it was like, okay, here's a few guys. But was it not McGillney that was the first one to... They were allowed to come, but McGillney left. And so
defected, maybe?
Defected, yeah. He defected. And that really started the ball rolling for the players to start coming over and playing. But there were so few players. You know, we had a few Europeans, like Swedes and Finns and a couple of Germans.
Right.
But we didn't have any players, until the Big Five and Alex came over and the Stastnys went. So what's that, 8-9 guys? I mean,
right.
Really, it's not a lot of players. But, who knew what was eventually going to happen? Now it's the best players in the world.
Look at Tampa. How many Russians are on Tampa?
Yeah, I mean, now I don't even... Remember, we used to keep track, and now I don't even keep track. I don't know, I mean, you just... It's amazing. You just think... What I look at the players, and it's interesting to find out where players are from.
Right.
Parts of Canada, what parts of the United States, and around the world, and things like that. But now it's just normal to have the best players in the world playing at the highest level, and so I think it's great.
Right. Was there any secret, Russ, to why the Russians got so good? Like, you know, the Canada, the Summit Series, right, was the first big one, right, where people opened up their eyes and said, this is unreal, right, the 72 Series.
Well,
when you played, were the guys going, we got to talk to these Russian guys. These guys are unbelievable. You know?
Well, they when they found an athlete in Russia, I mean, they went to a certain school and they studied, but then it was all sports mostly.
Right.
And they were so focused on training and being the best they could be, and their total focus seemed to be just the sport that they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
And very strict, and it was a way out for them. The better they were in sports, the more things they got.
Good one. Yep.
You know, they got their parents got things, they got better housing, they got better food. So for them, it was a way out, where for us, it was a lifestyle. We played because we loved it, and it was fun. For them, it was different. It was a business for them to improve their life for themselves and for their family.
Well, you bring up a good point. That's bang on, probably, right? We want to get out of here. You know, is probably what they're thinking. You know, and you make a great point. You know, the incentive to get more money and to look after their families and stuff. I think they were probably thinking back then. And you know, even the great ones said nothing against Russia or going to play over in the Czech Republic or going to play in in the KHL over there. But he said, if you're from North America, you know, and you play in the NHL, and a lot of guys, right, went over there during the strike and the lockouts and all this stuff, right, and went to play. And some guys do it when they're holding out on their contract. And he said, have at it. Go ahead, help yourself, get over there and go play in Russia. And call me in a week when you're complaining about your apartment and the food and everything else. And he wasn't really cutting that down, but he just said, you're going to realize how great it is to play hockey in North America.
Yeah. You know? Well, and that goes right now politically, and we're not supposed to get political on the show, but all these people who want socialism in both countries, they need to go live in a socialized, government-run country, and they'll quickly come back here and not wish for what they're hoping to get accomplished here. And Wayne, so it's so correct. The players that come over, and you know what happens when the Europeans come over? Yeah, they love the North American lifestyle, but the home is home. And so they'll play here, they'll enjoy themselves, make a lot of money, and then most of them move back. The odd player who will maybe marry a North American gal might stay, but a lot of them go back. But they sure get spoiled to a lifestyle. When Larionov and Krutov were in Vancouver, there's a story that one of the wives took them grocery shopping.
Right.
and they st- and the and their wives start filling up their baskets like they were never the
never gonna eat
was,
again.
Yeah, the store was going to be closed, and they were crying, filling up their baskets. They couldn't believe it, and whoever it was said, "Don't do that. You can come back tomorrow." And they're like, "Tomorrow? We can come back tomorrow."
No kidding.
And it'll be like that every day. And they were shocked because they had food lines back then. They could only shop on certain days.
Sure.
And they couldn't get everything all the time.
Rationing.
Yep. Rationing, yeah. So they were just shocked and amazed when they came over here. And I'm pretty sure Larry, I'm not sure about Lariano. If he did live in the United States for quite a while. We were in California together after his career, but I don't know if he moved back or not.
Well, Bure stayed, right? He married that chick, you know, in L.A., actress.
But Val, yeah, Candace Cameron.
Right.
He from Full House. Val, though, he came over when he was a teenager, and, you know, he's been here most of his life.
Pavel's brother, by the way, of course.
Yeah, and he lives in California. They have a winery, and his wife's an actress, and they've got three beautiful kids. And so he's more, I'd say, Americanized.
Right.
He still, you know, has the accent and loves his home country, but he loves the United States too. So he's not going back, but Pavel moved back. He sold his home in Florida and moved back to Moscow.
You know, Russ, the sports is up and going. The NHL is doing a great job, but with no fans, okay? Except, did you see that story about the guy who got in Fenway Park?
I just saw the video of the guy.
Tell me about it. I don't have
well,
it in front
I,
of me.
I see the video, and he jumps. He gets over a wall or whatever. He gets over the fence, jumps into, looks like an area where they have the TV cameras.
Yeah,
and they stop the game and they pan the stadium, and he's the only person in there.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
Let's stop the game. We've got one person in here.
I know.
He's missing his front teeth.
Yeah,
and he just threw a ball hat. He takes a ball cap and throws it on the field.
Right.
I don't know. I wasn't.
Well, I heard he was yelling at players and everything.
Yeah, yeah. He was, "Hey, you!" Oh gosh.
Anyway, great discussion about Russia and hockey and all that stuff, Russ. That was great. Before I get into this thing about contracts, I, like you and a lot of people, just finished watching the U.S. Open golf. I put 100 on my girlfriend Dustin at I got 9-1. And I also I was on till about the back nine, Russ, because I threw another 100 on Xander Schauffele.
Yeah,
and he was right in there, and that would have got me 15, hun.
Oh boy,
15-1. Anyway, should have, could have, didn't. You know, but anyway, Russ, this golf tournament, if you have any appreciation for golf at all, is a murderous golf course. The U.S. Opens are always on incredibly tough courses.
Doesn't look fun at all. It doesn't look like they're having any fun.
No, and only one guy shot under par. He was the winner. Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open. He ended up shooting 6 under, and the next closest was even par. Matthew Wolf, I think, was the guy who locked up second. So it's, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, the rough is not 2 inches high. It's 4 and 6 inches high.
Gross.
It's fairways are super narrow. The greens are wickedly fast. The tees are way back. And,
yeah.
And I mean, they laugh, right? They laugh. The organizers laugh. Who's, whether it's the USGA, I think, who probably does the US Open, it sets this thing up and just goes, watch them crumble. You know, absolutely crumble. And I just, you know, Russ, should they, would you like to see all sports, Russ, big championships made tougher like that? I, you know, the game of hockey, of course, you know, would you want to see it, you know, smaller nets and
no,
you know, shorter or longer penalties or stuff, I don't know, or make it harder and harder, or do you like it? Or would you like to see it easier than it is?
No, I wish the golf was easier so they'd score better and play better, but they just look miserable out there. I mean, it looks so frustrating to the golfers. And when they hit it in the rough, you can't even see the ball. As a fan, you can't see it. They're standing over top of it, and they hit these shots. And
good point, yeah.
It's amazing, but like hockey right now with no fans and us watching on TV, it looks great. Today, the golf was, to me, you know what? I was pulling for Wolf because he's from Westlake where I live in L.A.
Oh, is that right?
And
oh,
he's okay. really good friends with Tristan Gretzky. They've grown up together playing golf at Sherwood. And so he's a hometown kid and we were all pulling for him. But I found myself not even watching because it was so, it was just gross.
Right.
Like the way, you know, just, it was no fun.
So you'd rather higher scoring in sports, Russ, than making it impossible to score.
You're asking me a question about all sports. I'm talking about golf. Leave, everything else is fine. Golf, they're just, this weekend was a joke.
Right.
Yeah, right. No. And you know, back to you losing those two bets. I've said it before. You couldn't win today with tomorrow's newspaper.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, yeah. My God. You are... Your bookie must just go, honey, book the keg tonight. We got 200. We're going out for dinner. This is a slam dunk. You can order whatever you want.
Yeah. You know, I am so bad.
Okay, it's on, Jimmy.
I'm so bad, Russ. Every once in a while. This is how bad I am. I'm so bad betting with the book. Every once in a while, there'll be an envelope of cash in my mailbox from the guy. He goes, yeah, go have fun this week. And he'll be like, you know, here's a couple hundred. You know, that's how bad I am at betting.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm the worst. Anyways, I watched it and I thought, you know, what are you laughing at? What are you laughing at, right?
When the guy makes a reservation, he goes, they say, who's that under? And he says, Jim Jerome. I mean, Bill Smith. Yeah. Who's Jim? Why are you and Mom always toasting Jim?
Yeah. Dad, how come we have to sit down, Dad, and usually we write thank you letters to Santa Claus. How come we have to write them to Mr. Jerome? Anyway, so we don't need to make sports tougher. I didn't enjoy it, and it's just everyone's fearing for their life, and I like the more scoring than the... Dustin at minus 30 that weekend was way more enjoyable than watching this. Rusty, before we go, contracts, right? They're all the, now it's year round, right? Everyone's negotiating contracts year round. You know, aside from free agency and all that talk, and there's always the thing about holding out, you know, or not showing up to camp, or you know, I'm staying over in Europe. That's where I'll be playing before I, unless you get a deal done and all that. I don't like it, Russ. What's the deal, Russ? When if you're negotiating a contract, you got your agent. How far do you go, Russ, with this thing before you get the money you want?
You know, holding out, we could learn a lot from our wives.
That's the fucking best. That is the best.
They're a whole lot better at it than we are.
and they get what they want, Russ.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we could all just send them in there.
That is the best.
Fuck the agents.
Yeah.
Holding out.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, you know. Players, it ends up getting ugly, you know, when people hold out, and usually the player gets traded, or you know, there's always a bad taste. It's good to get it done before and have those arguments during. But then you get a lot, you know, the agent and the GM, oh, we don't want to talk about it during the playoffs. Or the player says, I don't want to talk about it during the season. I want to talk about it after. And I've just never heard of anyone who's held out, whether when there's, at the end of it, it's positive. Oh, they held out. And, you know, it's kind of like you're getting separated, possibly getting divorced, and you move in the next person, whether you're the husband, wife, the three of you are living together. It just doesn't work.
Right.
And so they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get over this. They never get over it because somebody's embarrassed, whether it's the player took less money or the GM that had to pay more money, and he's promised his boss that he's going to sign this player for less. The agent has promised his player he's going to get more. Somebody's going to lose. There's never, oh, I held out and we, you know, we ended up back where we started. That, yeah, it doesn't usually work out that way. It's right. Holding out sucks. But sometimes people have to do it. Sometimes both sides can be unreasonable. One, the player can be asking way too much, or the right. team's offering too little. And so you got to get to some common ground, but it's just too bad that we can't get to that common ground before. And that goes with the PA, NHL PA and the owners too, when we've had those lockouts because we can't agree. It sucks because we end up, you know, the fans get hurt, the players get hurt. I suffered through a lockout. Mm-hmm. I lost $500,000, half my salary, mm-hmm. and never got that money back. And I, you know, and lost ground. It was back when we could have been free agents. Cam Neely and I would have been free agents amongst other players our age, mm-hmm. at 30 years old, and it got bumped to 32. And Cam and I look at each other, and we're like, okay, we're in the prime of our career. And they just bumped it two more years, and we lost half our salary. I mean, that was not worth it.
How's it going?
Yeah. Right. So somebody always loses. It sucks.
Right. Right. I'll give you an idea, though, Russ. I'll give you three numbers here that I think I understand why guys might hold out. This is what I saw earlier in the week to give you an idea of how much freaking money is in sports. Okay, which you know, but this past week there was a new stadium unleashed in the NFL called SoFi Stadium in LA. Okay, $6.5 billion, Russ, to build that thing.
No.
Okay. Yes, Russ, $6.5 billion. The New York Mets are entertaining an offer for $2.5 billion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Messi, the soccer player there, your kids are into soccer. He now joins the Billionaires Club for making money as an athlete.
Good for him.
So isn't that like just excruciatingly rich, Russ, from when you played? what's oh happening with money? So
it's amazing, you know. The entertainment value for everything is so international now. I mean, just advertising dollars and everything is so, you know, you just turn your phone on and frick, you get like all these commercials and companies are paying for that. They're paying for that touch. And so these players, actors, people are making boatloads of money because of it. Like freaking TikTok. Okay. My daughter sends me these TikToks. They're saying it's valued at $60 billion. I'm like, what? TikTok.
Yeah.
I mean, what do they do other than my daughter sending me all this stuff? But people around the world are doing all this stuff, so they have the eyes and ears of all these people. So Messi, I know who Messi is. I mean, he's like Pele. I mean, you mentioned Pele and Gretzky, and nowadays if you say someone's first name and they know who you are, no matter what part of the world you're in, that person's making a lot of money.
Hey, Russ, cell phones and the internet, right, are the biggest two things to happen in the last 25 years, hands down, right?
The two.
And I'll tell you, in the end, Russ, okay, if you didn't have it, okay, you'd be fine. In the end, all it's done, Russ, is made a bunch of companies a lot of money really fast.
Yeah.
I really believe that. You know, I really believe, I don't, you know, I used to phone on a rotary dial, you know, I socialized, I got out of the house. Internet, anything I get on the internet, I might get it. If I didn't have it, I would get it at the latest the following day, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've heard of guys having offices all over North America or in real estate. One guy told me a story. He's 88 or 89 now, and he had eight secretaries in eight cities. So he had eight offices. He had real estate in each one of those, and he would fly from city to city to city. And now he picked up his phone like this, and he shows it to me, and he goes, now I don't have eight offices, and I don't have eight secretaries. I have this one phone.
Right.
And so the phone's changed a lot of things, and the computer's changed a lot of things.
But really just to make dough.
You and I, it hasn't changed much.
Right. It hasn't, right? It's like I don't need to. I can wait till tomorrow when I run into you having coffee. Anyway. Rusty, good show. We got to get a couple emails, Rusty. But before we do that, We started a Where Are They Now?
Oh, I got one.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. And what we're going to do is, what's our email, Stevie? What's our email address? I'm going to the producer here.
It's thesuspendables@yahoo.com.
So we got an email address, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. You probably just heard that. So if you want to email us and you want to ask Russ, where are they now? Okay? That's what we're going to, you can do that this week and lay it on us and we'll find out. But you've got one, Russ, again. Darren Langdon. I love Darren Langdon.
Oh, Langer from Newfoundland.
The Newf.
I played with him in New York and a great guy. We went to Gretzky's Fantasy Camp in Vegas a few years back and had a great time. And Langer has a bar. And he's got, you know, he went out on a limb naming this place, and it's called Langer's. And it's in Deer Lake, Newfoundland. Yeah. So to all the Newfoundlanders that listen to the show and Langer, I'm sure the beers there are still $2. And if they're not Langer, take it from $3 down to $2 for this night and listen to the Suspendables with all your buddies and have a couple beers.
Big shout out to Darren Langer. What a wonderful guy. And I'll tell you what, talk about, hey, not too fast, everybody. Not too fast here, okay? Everybody just slow down. He's one of the greatest guys around. I got to get down to his bar there one year.
Fuck, we were sitting around in Vegas at Gretzky's Fantasy Camp, bunch of guys.
Yeah.
And he gets a text from his wife and goes, geez, the wife, she's winning a slot machine.
I was with you.
We were in that little bar on the corner with Rick talking.
That's right.
My brother.
That's right.
I remember he's like reading her text going, boys, the girl, the wife just won 300. Oh, no, 600. Oh, yeah. Hang on, 800.
Yeah.
It's still going. She's texting him play by play. And he's reading it to us, and we start laughing. And I think it was like $3,000 she won or something.
She did. Crazy. She won a whack. Yeah.
No, 300. No, 6, 8. Yeah. Oh, 1,200. It's still going, boys.
He's the best. And he's going. I said, because she's having fun. He goes, well, I'll tell you what, Jim, there's not too many of these slot machines down east, you know. slot machines, Langer. Yeah, I'm saying slot, you know. He had the great accent, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, God, he was tough, man, and what a great teammate, fun guy, and we had some fun card games at the...
Win a cup, Russ, in New York, then?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was there in 97 with them, and we lost in the semifinals, yeah.
Yeah, that's
lost
after.
Lost to Philly.
Shout out to a bunch of people. Roy Worthington. Roy, thanks. He tuned in last week. Loves the show. He's up in Lac La Biche. Remember, we got new fans up in Lac La Biche. Thank you, Roy. And if you're from Lac La Biche, Russ, got a good real estate business up there, okay? You got to list your house with Roy. Crash Davis emails us, Russ. And this is fitting because we're talking about money. What's the take-home pay, Russ, of a player after agent, manager, lawyers, all that stuff? Give us an idea, Russ, of who gets their cut and how much.
The agent only, they get 3%, so 97%, and then, of course, taxes and everything. But 3% is common.
There you go.
Yep.
Did you have a manager too, Russ?
No.
A money manager?
No, that would... I mean, guys do, but that's separate that's separate from negotiations. I mean, they're Goldman Sachs guys. I don't know what... They get 1% or 2%, I think, of the...
Right.
But of take-home pay... It's 3%. Some guys don't invest with a money manager,
right,
so that's optional. But an agent negotiating contracts, 3%.
Tell me, Russ, the difference in taxes in Quebec where you played and then when you played in Mini or California?
When I played in Quebec and it wasn't terrible, there was in the 70s, it was 70s and early 80s, it was really bad. And
right,
then they lowered the taxes. But when I was there, it wasn't horrible. It was definitely in the United States, it was a lot less. And then
right,
I got traded to the U.S. from Montreal.
Yeah.
And of course, Clinton got elected and raised taxes by a freaking 10%. I'm like, are you shitting me? I've been waiting my whole career to get down here. I freaking show up and I get dinged with taxes. It was, I mean, it literally happened exactly when I got there. So taxes went way up.
One of my favorite stories ever, you talk about stock markets and financial advisors and guys taking their cut. And my mother and my dad were both rusty, as I've told you before. They had their black belt in scotch, okay? They could drink, man. And my mother drank a lot, okay? God rest her soul, my mother, Barry. And she could drink, and she said, my dad was drop dead fine. I wish you would have got to meet him, Russ. He was so funny. And we're sitting in the house at the kitchen table. My mom gets up and says, I'm going out for lunch with the ladies, right? And I'll be back in a couple hours. And my dad watches her walk out the door, and he picks up the phone, and he goes into the phone. He goes, can I speak to my broker, please? He goes, give me 70,000 shares of Seagram's.
There's this guy, Caesar, at our club at Sherwood Country Club. Just a great guy from, I think he's Puerto Rican.
Yeah,
and just a groovy, great-looking guy, older, and was living in Beverly Hills at the time, and somebody went through our parking lot at Sherwood, and they stole his wallet, and there was like three break-ins, and they thought it was the car wash guy, they thought it was the gardener, they didn't know who it was. Yeah, so I see him the next day, and it was
inside job. Yeah,
did they find your wallet? And he goes, nah, they did not. And I go, well, the good news is the guy who stole it is spending less money than your wife. And he goes, you know, Rusty, you've got a point there.
You've got a point there, Rusty. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't report the credit card stolen. The wife's spending less, baby. Rusty, carry on, man. Are you still in Gaza? What's happening? You going back? When do we get you back in L.A.?
Yeah, I am probably headed the end of this week or mid the following week. So if we, we'll see what happens. But before October 1st, I'll be back in L.A. and driving back there in the next 10 days, I guess, or less. Just depends.
I'm sure L.A. can't wait. It'll be good to have you back. Carry on, Rusty. Have a good week. Thanks for listening, everybody. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and of course, longtime NHLer and guest of honor every week, Russ Courtney.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Courtney in LA. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.